All right, I'm ready. Welcome to episode 400 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. It's episode 400, and I would not do this all by myself, even though Richard can't be here because he's at stupid South by Southwest. Nope, instead, I've got the next best thing, and that would be Mr. James Montemagno. Welcome back, James.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here yet again on this super special day. 400 episodes. Congratulations.
Thanks. It is kind of crazy to think that we've been doing this for 400 episodes. It's nuts. That means we've been doing this. I didn't actually go back and look. I know the DMZ started in April of 2009. So, holy crap, that's almost 8 years ago.
8 years
and
ago.
I think Entertainment 2.0 started in late 2008. So yeah, it's been a really, really long time.
When did I start the movie podcast? That's what I need to look up.
It's
going to be impossible to find.
2010, 2011.
Oh, here we go.
Ish.
I think it's still archived. Oh, there it is.
Oh, I'm sure it's definitely still on the DMZ.
Oh my goodness. I'm pulling it up in iTunes. Pulling it up in iTunes right now. Now, what's interesting though is, well, I'm on my Mac. What's interesting is like, yeah, it's gone. So, all right. So I think we started, I made it 200 episodes. I did remember that. And I always thought to myself, man, it would be so great just to double it to 400 and then get to the 600 or 1,000. But 400 episodes now, how many weeks have you guys missed? That's a real question. Have you guys been strong every single week or have there been off weeks?
Definitely been off weeks. I mean, we missed 2 weeks in a row just a couple weeks ago. But I think that's the only time we've ever missed 2 weeks in a row. But we've definitely had some other weeks that we've missed. But I mean, all of this is just guessing. It's got to be, I don't know, maybe 6 episodes that we've missed per year on average.
That's not bad. That is not. And you, honestly, you can mostly just blame Richard because he's always flying and going to South by Southwest and going to home shows. And
sure. You know, not here, I am totally willing to throw him under the bus for every single episode we've missed. Even the ones before he was co-host. They're all his fault.
They're all, yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah.
All right. So maybe instead of talking about podcasting, we should actually just do the show. So let's get into this. We've got just one quick bit of follow-up feedback from Nick last week. He had written in asking about what he should do to replace his dying home theater PC. We gave him a whole bunch of options that kind of centered around the HD Home Run DVR and maybe Plex DVR and things like that, because he still wanted live TV and DVR functionality. And using an Xbox, as long as you still had something else to do your recording on. And he wrote back, I love it when people actually write back after we give them some answers so that we can find out what they did or what they're planning to do. And he said he does have another machine. He's got another Windows 10 server PC that he's using, and he'll use that to run the HD Home Run DVR server software on. So that'll house all of his recordings. And he's now thinking that probably the Xbox One sounds like his best option for what to put under the TV. So I'm very glad that we were able to help Nick out, and we'd love to help you guys out with your questions too. If you want to get those questions answered, just shoot us an email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or just use the contact form on the website because the email address is really stinking long to type.
I got a question for you. Actually, it's a follow-up to Nick's follow-up, because I think every single time I actually come on Entertainment 2.0, I have a whole different setup at home, and I now have a Plex server running to an HD Home Run on a Ready NAS doing all my recordings, and I use an NVIDIA Shield. I was going to use an NVIDIA Shield as my actual HD Home Run, and I said, I'm going to buy one of these little Ready NASs and put everything on it. Which is really cool. So I was actually in the same spot as Nick, and except for he's using a Windows 10 server, and I'll tell you why I chose a ready NAS is because it's going to have all my storage in a NAS configuration, and it just works, man. It's great. I don't have to worry. It's super low power. I don't have to worry something like Windows 10 and updates and things like that crashing. And it's just dedicated, which I really like. And it has a dual NIC in it. It's crazy. It's $200. It's bananas. Anyways, so for me, I chose not to go with an Xbox One, even though I have an Xbox One under my TV. And why I bought an NVIDIA Shield as my main live TV playback and as my Plex client. And that is because the family household approval factor. And this is kind of like my debate of like where I've gone with it, but you're more of a family man, Josh. And me, it's just me and Heather in the house. And we find the interface for Android TV for doing live TV, which now has live TV and time shifting in it, which is really nice. To be awesome, and to go through other channels like Hulu or Plex to be seamless. I mean, it's just a fantastic experience compared to Xbox One, which I just think is a hub above, and it just takes forever to update, to turn on, to do anything. So would you still recommend this configuration? That's my whole question. Now that you know my configuration, would you still recommend for Nick just to get an Xbox One? Like, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, What I've always said is, if all you're interested in is video streaming type stuff, don't get an Xbox One because it's the most expensive option for doing that sort of stuff. But if you're interested in gaming too, then there isn't a box that does more things than the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, the live TV interface through the Channels app or whatever it's called on NVIDIA Shield is pretty good, but their DVR stuff is not great yet either. So, I kind of have more confidence that the Silicon Dust guys are going to get updated versions of HD Home Run DVR and their viewer app out faster than Google will. Plus, the big thing I think is, even if the live TV, any part of that experience, even if it's better on the TV, I don't do most of my watching on my TV. Mm. And with the HD Home Run stuff, I can watch my recordings anywhere on any device that I have. And that's not true if I just use the stuff that's built into that Google Channels app on the NVIDIA Shield. I can only watch it on the Shield. And that's,
so what if you're using Plex for your recordings? Like, so what I do, here's my setup, is I use Plex as my recordings, and then I watch live TV, which I rarely ever do. Like, I watch The Bachelor, for instance, and then we'll turn it on and pause it so we can skip through channels because it's live TV. But we don't actually use the live channels for recording because both of those have, maybe the HD Home Run does this. There's one feature of Media Center, which I think is fundamentally missing from all of these platforms. And I'm totally sidetracking. And that's what James does when he comes on Entertainment 2.0. But it's really important because Windows Media Center, why I fell in love is I could just start watching a show, hit record, and I could just walk away. I could be in the middle of that recording, go back in, start at the beginning, and time shift to and from no matter what. Plex doesn't do it because it doesn't let you even watch it live at all. Live channels on Android TV lets you do it only if you start watching the show, hit pause, it'll buffer a half an hour, and then you can scrub through it. But if you change the channel, it's gone. And you can't go into a current recording and actually do time shifting, which is very, like, I feel like these companies are missing the gap there. Like, so does your setup with the HD Home Run do that? Like, that's because I want to offer these listeners the ultimate setup experience, and I'm not sure what it is.
You know, I wish you would have asked me that before we started tonight, because I can't confidently answer that question because that's not stuff that I do very often anymore. Like you, I don't watch very much live TV anymore. The stuff that I watch the most frequently live is hockey, and I don't do that through a tuner. I do that through the NHL TV app.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm not really sure. I mean, at this point, I record a couple of shows that Jen and I watch, but, you know, we'll go like 2 months without watching anything together. And then I record the Sunday morning news shows. And there's really not much else that I'm recording. I'm recording some kid shows and stuff for the kids, but none of that is watched live either. So I don't have a ton of live experience with this stuff.
Yeah, what ends up happening, to be honest with you, is that even if I record the TV shows, the next day they're available on Hulu and I don't have to scrub through commercials. They're just gone. It becomes almost like Heather's just like, can we just wait till tomorrow so I don't have to worry about it? You know what I mean? Which is right. So funny. But anyways, I digress. That's interesting to know. I just feel like no one's nailed it. And all of these streaming services and everything has gotten so good that almost my tuner is like that 1% of the time, you know?
Anyways. Right. Yeah, exactly. And don't feel bad for sidetracking, because I did want to, you know, this is episode 400. We've been doing this forever. And I did want to spend some time tonight talking about how our setups have changed. You know, you and I, and we might as well just continue to do this now. You and I both started way, way, way back when being 100% Windows Media Center.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was great. And it, in many ways, is still great. It just isn't getting, you know, it hasn't been updated since. It hasn't been significantly updated since Windows 7 launched mm-hmm. in the fall of 2009. And now it hasn't been included or even available since Windows 10 came out. So, you know, obviously you and I have both moved away from that. And I think you and I both kind of went and tried a lot of different things. You know, you've landed on Android TV. And I'm still very much in the Microsoft space.
Yeah.
But it's all, but at the back end, there is still an Android box that's running there for me, which I think is the weird thing. And I never would have expected that to be the case. But that NVIDIA Shield is just such a compelling little device that paired up with HD Home Run DVR and the Plex DVR software. Or even if you don't want to use the Plex DVR software, like use what I end up doing. Is I have the HD Home Run DVR stuff running on the NVIDIA Shield with an attached USB hard drive. And my Plex server runs on the same machine. And I've just added the folders that are created from the HD Home Run DVR as part of my TV library inside of Plex that's running on the same thing. So it just automatically gets updated. All of my recordings are visible inside of the HD Home Run apps and inside of Plex. So I can watch all of those things on basically any device because the HD Home Run app is on everything. The Plex app is on everything, even more things than the HD Home Run app.
Yeah.
It's a great place to be.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the family, you know, they've got the Xbox.
Yeah.
And for them, almost all of, well, so for Jen, it's mostly Plex, but she watches very little content. For my oldest, the 8-year-old, she's a mix of Plex and Netflix and maybe a little bit of Amazon. And then the youngest is still mostly just stupid videos on YouTube. So, but some Plex too.
Yeah.
I've talked about in the past, like making playlists for every recorded episode of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood that I have. And that makes watching all of that a lot easier for her and for us to get her going on watching that stuff. So, I mean, that's where I am, but I was 100% Windows Media Center up until last year.
You know, oh, wow.
That was,
oh, yeah.
2016.
You were holding out. What's funny is, so I looked this up. Are you ready for this? I went to RevoHTPC.com. That is correct. Original post, February 2010. This additional post, February 2010, Revo HTPC, live tonight on Entertainment 2.0 podcast. I'm not even going to, and we were streaming it at the time, which is funny. And so I got into it because this is before I worked for Seton. I just graduated and these tiny little Revo home theater PCs came out. I knew nothing about Media Center. I knew nothing. I think it was still Vista, I want to say, in 2010. I want to say Vista.
No, that was 7.
It was 7. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these machines were a 1.6 gigahertz processor. You know, I didn't have a lot of money at the time. Don't have a lot of money now, but they were $200 or $150 machines. I put in a single tuner OTA card in Phoenix, and I just started hooked up a hard drive. I started recording all this stuff, and that evolved, right? Once you get an itch for home theater PCs, I'm like, this is so good. And then I evolved to building, you know, more rigs and more things. And then, you know, then I worked at Seton, right? Which is funny. And I built my media center, and I built... The the Android version of the Seton Echo, which never got released except for a few people, which no one knows about. But we built an entire DVR that never got released. It's crazy. I mean, people knew because there's like some screenshots leaked and things like that of what we were doing. But it was crazy. We were so ahead of our time. And it was interesting because then things got so complex. And as I started to downsize in Seattle and just kind of space wise, I'm like, I'm not watching a lot of TV. I'm traveling all the time. And things got so complex. And as Media Center and Windows 8 came out, it got more complicated. I'm like, man, it's just so hard to run a computer underneath a TV. I felt like I wish that this Media Center was just a dedicated platform. And then when the Xbox One came out, I was like, maybe this is it. And I bought the tuner and I did all this stuff. And I was like, this isn't it. I'm like, I feel like this isn't it. And I had remembered, I became a Plex Pass member. I think I paid $50 back way, way back in the day. And it was good. And then I just reinstalled it. Now I'm like, oh, this is really good. And things just got so incredibly easy for Plex. And I mean, it's ready. And I just plug it in and it's done. And all the apps are like, things have come so far where I just feel like I'm like you said, I barely watch live TV. And my parents, they watch live TV. They watch NCIS all the time. They can't not turn it off. But they have an Apple TV under their TV and they watch all their stuff on there half the time. But for our household, I've standardized on the Android TV and Plex because Plex gives the flexibility of me to watch all my recordings. Heather can watch all of her things on her iPhone, on her Android tablet. I could literally go to plex.tv.com right now and start streaming stuff right now from my home. Like, that is bananas. And I remember trying to do that back in the day with the Windows Home server and all the plugins for that. It just got so complicated. And it's all about this minimalistic, interesting, small setup, right? Literally in my closet is a router, HD home run, antenna, and then this little tiny NAS. Like, it all fits into a shoebox. Like, that's my home theater PC setup that is global at any point if I want to watch something. It kind of blows my mind how far just the industry has come and how good things have gotten for enthusiasts, while the home theater PC itself has really transformed to what it wasn't in 2010. It's completely different.
Yeah, it's come a huge way. I mean, I remember back in the late 2000s trying to rig together third-party utilities to make it so that I could watch recorded TV, you know, outside of my home network, and even trying to get live TV, and that friggin' never worked. You know, and now, like just a week ago, I was sitting in an airport watching a hockey game live while waiting for the plane. Like,
yeah.
It's a pretty nice place where we're at right now. So yeah, it's good. And I love the fact that, you know, even though Media Center is, I'm not going to call it dead, there's still people using it. And
it's
still
on, it's on a leg. It's on a leg.
You know,
it's got its own toe or two.
Right. It's just kind of coasting into its retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft is still absolutely in this. You know, the Xbox is an awesome device. It has lots and lots of apps and services and features that I'm using all the time. I think that's only going to increase once we get the creators update on the Xbox. We've got some decent apps on the Windows 10 PCs. You know, it's a good place to be. I'm pretty happy with where it is.
And Microsoft has always wanted to put, they wanted to be the center of your media experience. I mean, they were the first ones to say, listen, we'll put a computer on your TV. Remember MS TV or Web TV or whatever?
Web TV.
I mean, they were so far ahead of everybody else in the market space. And the Xbox One, it tried to do everything when it came out. And the Xbox 360 tried to do tons of stuff too. And Microsoft still wants to be your focal point of your media center, which is good because I'm a Microsoft and a Googly person, and I use all of them. You know, I work at Microsoft, but you know, I really think that Microsoft has a strong passion to still offer and be best in class in all of these services. So as they continue to reinvent their music service 8 times until they get it right, they reinvent their video and television, right? Microsoft is a name, a lot of money behind it that they can push and shove around. And the Xbox is an important part to that experience. I've gone to some presentations at developer conferences that says, you know, Microsoft, we want to sell you some Azure, we want to sell you some Office, or we're going to put an Xbox on it. You know what I mean? We're going to, one of those things, and they all revolve around each other, which is so interesting. And Microsoft really does want to be that focal point, whether now it's not even on a Windows mobile device, it's on your iOS device, it's on your Android device. You know, I use my Android device for all my Xbox One stuff. We have Groove Music on there, and different services. So I think Microsoft will continue to expand. And if you follow the development part, which I'm really close to, and I know Josh, you are too, you know, the theme at Microsoft is every developer, every platform, you know, and it actually is interesting in the media space as more people own Windows 10 desktop devices and less mobile devices for Windows, but more iOS and Android, that Microsoft over the last X years has evolved to say, you know, we are the most cross-platform company out there. Look at our app store, look at our apps. And I think as us as a consumer, that's a great thing, right? That means that now we have all of these services available to us anywhere. And I was just talking to a colleague. I had my Switch on, my Nintendo Switch on the plane. And he's like, you know, I set this up at home where the biggest problem is I can't game on my TV. So what I do is I have a little 8-inch Lenovo tablet, and it has 5G Wi-Fi. I stream everything from my Xbox with that new Bluetooth controller. He's like, I can take my Xbox with me anywhere in the house. And I was like, that's a cool place to be right now as a media and gamer. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. Yeah, I load up the Xbox app on my laptop when it's getting close to bedtime and you know, one kid is watching TV on the TV and the other one is on my computer, and it's like, well, I can just stream the Xbox to my computer. You know, if I'm sitting on the couch, sitting at the table, whatever. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's interesting too.
Everything I want everywhere.
It's interesting too to watch as the companies around media, like your CBS, your Fox, your all these big companies, ABC, NBC, they sort of, like you being able to watch that hockey show, they've kind of loosened their grip on the streaming service, but then tightened their clamp down on the live, like OTA channels. I was talking to you. I go, Josh, you know, sometimes I have weak signal strength. I'm in Seattle. Should I like call Comcast and be like, can I get just a card, you know, like can I get the basic package and I can do that to my HU Home Run? And I called them up and they're like, no, you know, they're just like, you need a cable card, you need to go through all this stuff. I'm like, ugh, you know, like all that they've tightened that down so much, but then loosened a little bit in the streaming service. I don't know how you feel about that and how that's evolved your media center.
Well, I think that the consumers are what shaped that largely. I mean, we never saw huge adoption of cable card. I think the biggest numbers that I ever saw was close to 1 million cable card customers in the US. 1 million. That's nothing. Like 80% of American households pay for cable TV. 80%. There's 320 million people in this country. And there was 1 million-ish cable cards. That's nothing. It was just too complicated. Yeah. So, and at the same time that was happening, you've got the iPhone getting launched and people becoming far more mobile and people wanting to consume media on so many different devices, not just their TV anymore, that the entire industry just shifted to, let's find ways to make this work on these other devices. Like the TV isn't as important. You know, I remember now how many times during those first couple hundred episodes of Entertainment 2.0 did we talk about how input one on your TV is all that matters? I don't know that input one even matters all that much anymore when half the people in your household are watching on a tablet or a phone or a computer. The TV in a lot of houses isn't even the most used device for watching TV anymore.
That's a good point.
Or watching video content at all. Yeah. So fortunately, we've seen the content creation companies and content distribution companies release apps to enable us to do this. You know, you've got I've got my NHL app for watching every hockey game that's on.
I have the football app. Not NFL, but the soccer, the proper football.
Right.
When the World Cup was coming around and the Sounders, I was streaming it. I just paid $4.99. I'm like, oh, I can stream this immediately.
Right. You've got, and not even just sports, you know, you've got you know, AMC has an app, CNN has an app. There's Hulu, of course. There's obviously Netflix and Amazon. And then the cable companies have also done the same thing. You know, Fios has a pretty decent offering. Comcast has pretty decent mobile apps. Time Warner, when they were still called Time Warner Cable, had some pretty good mobile apps. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all moving in that direction. And it's, by and large, been pretty beneficial to all of us consumers. So, like, we've got Vinyl Freak in the chat room who's saying that it's too bad that Microsoft didn't continue to develop Media Center to be a better platform for audio and video. And I think the thing is that, like, even if it was just audio and video, that's not really enough. Like, I don't want an app that just does audio and video. But more importantly, people don't want to have a computer hooked up to their TV.
They created that platform. It's called Xbox One. That's what they did. Like, that's what they did, you know?
Exactly. Because people don't want to maintain a computer and the cost of a computer to do all of that through your TV. Just buy, you know, when the Apple TV came out and the Roku box and the, oh man, there's some that I'm missing here that I can't even remember. You know, all of these boxes started coming out. They were able to do all of these things and they cost $100, $200. And to build a decent computer that was going to be reliable to do all of this, you're looking at 300 or more.
Yeah. It's like, even if Media Center grew into this huge interface, it still would have been niche, you know, a niche market, a niche in a market, because they'd have to get over that burden where you can sell, you know, 50 million Xbox Ones. I don't know what the hell they sold, but probably a lot. And you've immediately hooked up more entertainment devices to televisions than PCs running Media Center will ever kind of combine to do, which is an intriguing part. And then you have PlayStation doing the same thing, and you have all these little streaming boxes. And what's so intriguing about your statement, as we talk about watching on more platforms, is how entertainment has evolved too. Because it's not just, you know, where I watch most of my television, it's not from ABC and NBC, it's from Netflix and Hulu. They're and Amazon, their original shows. You know, these streaming services have transformed even what it means to be a sitcom or a new show. I don't look half the time at the upcoming premieres, which was my favorite part of my Media Center application. I have to look, you know, at what's upcoming on Netflix. Oh, a new series is out. I'm just going to go watch it on Netflix. I'm going to watch the new House of Cards and whatever else is coming out. I always give all the Netflix things a chance, because if I miss episode one, it doesn't matter. It's there. That's my most frustrating part of live TV now, is if I miss episode one, well, you know, I guess I'm not going to be able to watch that series until the whole series is out, you know? And it's interesting to kind of think about how just those few streaming services has evolved, and they're award-winning. Just, they're sweeping, you know, some of these award shows. And that's what I think when people think of television, the next generation, when they think of television, they're not thinking of TV tuners and antennas. They're just thinking of Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And YouTube, really.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Crazy. It's when you put it like that, when we start like transforming just how media has gone, just where a lot of people, they don't even listen to podcasts. They watch the podcast on YouTube, you know, and things like that too. It's interesting. And in weekly shows and daily shows that are being produced just on YouTube alone, it's really transformative. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Okay,
I still think like they haven't gotten it correct, because all these applications just need to talk together. Let's be honest, but I digress.
Right.
That's the last part.
We're like a half hour in. We should probably cover some news.
Yeah. Did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish with this? I was super excited when you're like, oh, I want to do a whole reverb of everything. Did you get out of this what you wanted, Josh?
Yeah.
Cool. I like it. I think. The chat is very chatty, so I like that when the chat is sparking up conversation, you know that we're doing something right.
So. Yep. So let's move on to some news.
Yeah, news and stuff.
We always like to start with the video news. And on the Xbox side, we've got some news out of Sling. Sling TV, an app that really caught our attention when it was announced at CES last year, 2016. The app is okay, but people definitely had their complaints with the app. And a lot of people were finding that, you know, it's actually kind of better on the Roku. Well, if you felt that way and you're a Sling TV subscriber, or maybe you left because you didn't want to have to use a Roku, maybe it's time to consider Sling TV again, because they've released a huge new update to their Xbox One app, and basically it looks and works the way it does on the Roku. I don't have any experience with this personally, although I think I might soon as we head into the NHL playoffs, and I'm going to have to find another way to watch hockey. But the reports that I've read on places like Reddit and stuff, everyone is saying that the app is much more stable than it used to be. So if you're interested in Sling TV, now probably a pretty good time to give it another try, especially on the Xbox One.
Do you subscribe to Sling TV?
I don't. I've never even tried it. Like when it first came out, I tried to sign up for their free trial and the sign up process was failing. So I just stopped because, and then I was like, well, why do I even care? I'm still paying for cable. I'm just going to keep paying for cable. But yeah, when hockey gets to the playoffs in mid-April, my online NHL TV thingy won't work anymore. So I'm going to have to do something that gives me NBC Sports. So might be going to Sling TV fairly soon here.
It's not bad. Yeah, I'm kind of, I always wanted to try it. And then now there's like the YouTube TV that you guys talked about. And there's like so many options. I'm like, I don't know. And I already pay for Netflix and Hulu. And then it always comes to the point with these streaming services. Am I going to start soon paying more for streaming services than just to give Comcast my money? You know, that's where we don't want to get to. So, but yeah. I'm excited to see the actual new UI because, you know, I'm really a big stickler for user interfaces. I think people really liked my Media Center application. I'm just saying. Way back in the day.
Yep.
And that's why I keep using Plex, because I think their user interface is really intuitive and really good, which actually brings us to the next point of user interfaces on Windows, where a lot of people are using Plex. I'm going to dive into it, even though it's your topic, because I read it and it looks interesting to me. Is that it seems like Microsoft, the company I happen to work for, is doing some work, working on updating some applications, go figure. And remember that application that you don't use ever called Movies and TV on Windows 10? they're going to revamp it. It's some sweeping changes with lots of artwork, it looks like. They have explored, purchased, and personal, so kind of bringing things together into one nice place. It's going to be a huge revamp, it looks like. And someone found, I don't know where they found these at. Someone on Twitter found it on a Microsoft Power user. And there's some big changes to navigation. The old movies, TV, and video navigations options have been replaced with Explore, Purchase, and Personal. So the first one is kind of a broad overview of content into different categories. Purchase is obviously your purchase stuff. And while Personal simply acts as where you would put your personal videos and where things are at in your videos folder. Now, Microsoft, the company that is out there, it's a big company you might have heard of, they haven't talked about it at all. It's not really clear about the extensive. Do you use this application today? I'm going to launch it. What does it look like? Movies?
I don't use TV. It very often.
Ugh.
Because I'm normally using Plex. Like, I don't have much of a reason to use this app. The one thing that it gets used for in my household is I've got a few Disney movies that are available through the Disney Cloud thing that I've got integrated into the Microsoft Movies and TV app. So they just automatically show up for me. So like before I go on a road trip, I download those apps or download those movies like Monsters, Inc. and stuff like that to my Surface. And then the kids can watch Monsters, Inc. on the Surface in the car. But that's like, I barely use it for watching video myself.
Yeah, here's my assumption. So I just went into the current Movies and TV application, which I've never used, besides to actually watch like the videos back, because I know this icon when I just double click a, you know, movie file. So right now it shows you like just a horizontal list of movies, no grid. And then you can say show all, and that literally launches the store, which no one uses, into the Movies and TV section. Where the new user interface, again, I have absolutely no knowledge of this at all because I don't know. I don't work with this team at all. Is I'm assuming maybe they're going to make movies and TV like the platform. Like you can buy it here too, where you couldn't before. Like maybe this is your hub for all of your purchase and explore content, right? That's kind of my assumption, maybe, of just looking at these screenshots because it looks a lot more vibrant. If I see here, there's trailers and movies. That's my assumption. It looks very early, though, still.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. But
yeah,
I would imagine that it's probably about to come out, because I would think that they would want to launch this with the creators update, which we're expecting pretty darn soon here.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So last quick video news story, and that is Plex Cloud is now available to everybody who's a Plex Pass subscriber. You don't have to ask for an invitation to a special beta program or any of that craziness. Just if you're on Plex Pass, you probably already got an email from Plex saying, hey, come and try Plex Cloud. It's pretty simple. It's Plex running out in the cloud. You don't have to maintain a server anywhere. You just have to upload your content somewhere. And you've got some options here. Throw all your videos and music and photos and all that stuff on OneDrive, OneDrive personal, that is. Don't try to use your OneDrive from work. Like, that wouldn't be cool. You can also use Dropbox or Google Drive, and you just tie this all to a Plex server that you don't have to maintain. This is available to me because I have Plex Pass. I think the last time you were on, you were talking about how difficult that is to say.
Yes.
But I haven't had time to do this yet. And it's not something that I'm super interested in doing. I've got a really rock solid Plex server running at home already that I can access anywhere and doesn't cause me internet bandwidth usage to watch. So, but for someone who just wants to get started or doesn't want to maintain a machine anymore, then Plex Cloud makes a ton of sense. And now anybody can do this as long as you're a Plex Pass subscriber. So maybe you're not a Plex Pass subscriber yet. Maybe you want to give this Plex thing a try without having to do a bunch of work on a PC or something like that. Toss them $5. You can pay $5 for a month of Plex Pass, throw some content on your OneDrive, and give this a try. If it works, cool, keep doing it. If it doesn't, you're out $5. What's the big loss, you know?
Yeah, and this is interesting because I wonder how many features are there. Like, obviously Plex DVR isn't there, and there's got to be some other services that aren't there, because this is different than Cloud Sync, which is like backing up content to the cloud offline, which maybe you could back it up and then that could look at the Plex Cloud, I guess. And mostly for me, this becomes interesting is that if it's a Plex server in the cloud, will it be able to transcode and have more bandwidth than my computer or server at home, right? Like, do I create another Plex server that's like my cloud on the go server where I put content? That's what, like, me thinking about this would be interested in, because, you know, I have a little tiny Ready NAS that can only transcode so much content. Can their servers, like, what are they running? Do I have to pay for transcoding? I don't know. I'm so interested. Is it all free? I have no idea.
Yeah, their servers definitely do transcoding and probably do transcoding better than your little Ready NAS.
Yeah, probably. I'm looking at it now. And that's really cool. And of course, you got to buy some content. I think I was going to upgrade to 1 terabyte of Google Drive, and then I was just like, so much money. Then I didn't. And then I deleted all my content. So, but this looks really cool. I'm really excited to, I wanted to try it out. I might try it out just for funsies and put all my photos on there. I would be really interested in saying, hey, Plex Cloud Server, can I point you at my Google Photos? And then can you expose that all in some really nice, interesting way or something like that? Which would be
kind of
cool.
Oh, I bet it could.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Give it a shot.
All right. Let's move on to a very quick news story on the audio side. Groove Music, Microsoft's music app, which is available all over the place. It's on Windows 10 PCs, Windows 10 phones, Xbox One, and it's also on iOS and Android. And the Android version has gotten another decent update recently. And this one has two notable features. The first one is, if you've got a playlist, be social. Be a good share. You remember that lesson you learned in kindergarten? Share. Share your awesome playlist with your friends. You can now do that from the Groove Music app on Android. It's simple. You know, you long press on a playlist, it says share, it brings up the typical Android sharing stuff. Like, you want to send this as, you know, via email, whatever. And it's just a link. You're just sending a link to people. And if someone opens that link on a Windows 10 PC, it's going to open up the Groove Music app on their Windows 10 PC and show them that playlist. And if they've got that music already, then it's going to be playable right away. If they've got a Groove Music Pass, it's all going to be playable, assuming that it's all in Groove Music Pass. And if it's not, then they can go and buy it. So it's always nice to see cool social features for music services. And then the other one is, if you don't have a music pass, they've integrated the ability to do like previews, probably 15-second previews of songs, because they're totally pushing the store interface in the app now for you to buy music and stuff from them. So now you can at least preview songs that you might want to purchase or just sign up for a Groove Music Pass to listen to.
Yeah, that's how I like to enjoy listening to music, is 15 seconds at a time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's the best. You get a quick taste.
Yeah. not really.
No.
So let's move on to gaming. You and I are both gamers. This is the part where Richard normally zones out, but you and I, we both like gaming.
Yes.
You and I both have Xboxes. You are also a Nintendo guy. Do you have a PlayStation?
So I used to have a PlayStation 3, which actually is interesting about this story. So I bought a PlayStation 3 to do one thing, play Blu-rays. It wasn't the cheapest Blu-ray player at the time when it came out. And I bought a few games on it that I was into, like Uncharted, for instance, and some God of War games. But I didn't really play PlayStation too much. I don't like the controller. I just don't like I'm an ABXY type of guy. And I don't like the X's and the O's and the triangles. Right. I don't like the geometry. It's too confusing. I don't like the shapes. Too much geometry. I'll play Geometry Wars. That's about it. I have a Xbox One. I got a Nintendo Switch. I'm sure we'll get into later. I just don't have enough space to get an Xbox or a PlayStation 4. Nor do I really think I have a need. I think Xbox One just has everything that I need and a way better online infrastructure. And if I'm going to play games online or do stuff like that, I'm so content with the Xbox One. It's just so good in general.
So what you and I are missing out on then is PlayStation exclusive games like Uncharted and God of War and things like that.
Got to pick and choose.
PlayStation has now got a solution for you and I, the Xbox gamer, the Windows gamer, to be able to play those games. It's actually not new. It's a service called PlayStation Now, and it's a streaming service. It's sort of like Netflix. This is kind of like the Xbox Game Pass that we were talking about last week. This has been around longer. It's been all about PlayStation 3 games, and you pay them $20 a month, and they've got a huge catalog, almost 500 PlayStation 3 games that you can stream to a PlayStation 4 or a Windows PC.
Interesting.
That's where you guys come in here. This is where this works for me. This is where it works for James. You can't do this on an Xbox, but you can do it on a Windows PC. And the big news here is they're expanding this to include PlayStation 4 games.
That's the new stuff.
The new stuff. Yeah, is their latest console. That's the one that's comparable to the Xbox One. This is cool. Like, it has me considering it because there are PlayStation games I've never played that I'm interested in playing. I haven't owned a Sony console since the PS2. So there's a lot of PlayStation exclusives in their back catalog that I've never gotten to play. And there's some newer ones on the PlayStation 4 that I haven't gotten to play. And I'm just not going to buy a PlayStation 4. It's not happening.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy one. I mean, I guess if you could subscribe for, I think they said, was it $20 a month, I think? Which is a little bit more expensive than the brand new Xbox Game Pass, which you guys talked about, with $9.99 a month. $20 a month, it's a little bit, maybe for a month to like binge on games, I guess maybe is what you would do.
That's how I've been thinking about this service, because $20 a month, it's twice the cost of what the Xbox service is going to be. We also have no idea what PlayStation 4 games they're going to have, or even roughly how many. Microsoft has said that when their game streaming service comes out, and not streaming, their game subscription service comes out, they're going to have over 100 games. Now, that's not just Xbox One, of course, but I don't know. We'll see. Like, the other thing is that I don't really like this idea so much of streaming all the games. Now, maybe it isn't that big of a deal because I'm not going to be like streaming multiplayer games where that sort of thing really matters, but their stream is like, it's 720p, 30 frames per second, and it's only stereo audio. Like,
we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
Exactly the greatest.
Yeah. We're, it took so long for TV to get there, and there was other game streaming services. What is that? I forget what it was called. Game
On Live?
On Live. Yeah, remember that. That would do so good.
Bought by Sony. That's probably what this is.
Oh, that's probably what it is. That's funny. And I don't know. I'm just not ready to do that yet. I feel as though what's more important to me is taking my games everywhere with me. Like, I was literally playing the Switch on a plane today. Like, that's mind boggling. I'm pretty sure I'm not gonna be able to stream this or the Xbox Game Pass to it. But my concern is the game controller part of it, right? Like, compatibility with the systems. Like, do I have to go buy a PlayStation 4 controller or a PlayStation 3 controller? And is that gonna work with my computer? Can I use an Xbox One controller, an Xbox 360 controller? I think that's my other concern too, is it makes sense if I own a PlayStation 4, and it probably should be in their PlayStation Online subscription thing. That's why I thought the Game Pass would be part of Xbox Live or bundle it, right? In some way. But I don't know. I'm not ready. It may be the inner hipster on me that just likes to collect those discs. I'm not ready for game streaming. And like you said, why wouldn't I want the highest resolution? I have this amazing surround sound system. If I'm going to play games, I guess on my computer, I just have headphones, but I still want it to be amazing 1080p and I want it to be flawless. I'm not sold, but it's cool that it's there. It's thumbs up. It's a move in the right direction.
Yeah. That's about where I am with it.
Yeah. I'm not ready. I'm old school. I'm buying stuff. I'm against digital downloads. I'm all physical copies.
That's not true.
Here's my philosophy on games. I'm all physical copies unless you can only download it.
Really?
Yep. And I'll tell you why. Because you can resell those things. When you're done playing them or you hate the game, you can sell it. And that's great. And I've made a full swap of it. I used to be download only. It's all I ever want. But when you go to sell a system after some time, the digital downloads, they're whatever. They're not there. Who cares? You know, you own nothing. You own a little key. I don't know. I'm weird. I've switched it. I've flipped the switch where all my content have gone digital, but my games analog. I'm all about it. Weird, huh? Yeah, it's super strange. Now, well,
I'm a mix.
Yeah.
I buy some games physically. And like, if it's a game that I know I'm going to play the crap out of, especially multiplayer games, I'll just buy it digitally. Because I know I'm going to get my money's worth out of it. But if it's a single player game that I'm going to play through once and then be done, yeah, I'm buying that physically so I can resell it when I'm done.
Exactly. That's how I look at it. And that's a good point about the multiplayer. And I actually bought Titanfall 1 digital download, but Titanfall 2 physical copy, because often you can get better deals on physical copy games too. And, you know, I was so used to doing digital downloads or physical copies on the 3DS. That was my main platform. And it was a way of saying, well, digital downloading is so easy, I can throttle my purchases if I have to physically go to a store. Last year, I said, I'm not going to buy any new games unless I physically walk into a store. And I hate walking into stores. No one likes doing that. So because even Amazon's too easy. And the problem with the Xbox One, and I'm sure PlayStation 4 is the same, is you buy a disc and like the disc doesn't actually do anything. Like you put it in and it. Like I bought Doom and it's like, cool, come back in 2 hours. And you're like, well, why the heck did I buy this thing?
Right.
It's very upsetting. Yeah. So I think on Xbox, it's all wrong. But on other systems like 3DS or Switch, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Yeah. Because on the Xbox, you buy a game, you stick it in, it needs to install the game. And then frequently it's like, all right, now we're going to download a 10 gig patch.
Oh, terrible.
Before you can play. Right.
Every time. I was literally doing some Twitch streaming and I went to go play Titanfall and it's like, hey, we got to update. And I was like, oh, can't Twitch stream anymore. Playing something else.
Yep.
It was crazy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. But we still like playing games and we still buy games and
that's
we
true.
Still buy some of them digitally. And, you know, I frequently rip on these Microsoft weekly sales and their spotlight sale.
Mm-hmm.
Not this week. This week's deals with gold is pretty stinking good, guys. You're going to want to check this out if you're an Xbox gamer. There's a ton of games on sale, and a bunch of them are really big AAA games, and a bunch of them are really cheap. We're talking 50, 60% off. Like, every Assassin's Creed game is on sale. Gears of War 4 is half off. That means it's $30. Far Cry Primal is down to $20. Quantum Break is $24. ReCore is $20. Steep, guys, the Steep came out last fall. It's a $60 game. You probably just, if you're interested in it, it's a snowboarding game and skiing and all that stuff. If you're interested and you follow this industry closely, then you probably know that it was free to play all weekend. If you enjoyed it, it's half off also. So it's only $30. A bunch of really great deals here. It's Ubisoft or Ubisoft. I've never figured out how to pronounce that. They're the publisher that's selling a bunch of games for super cheap, in addition to, you know, some of this other stuff like Gears of War 4 and Quantum Break and stuff. Those obviously are Microsoft games, not Ubisoft games, but a ton of really good games in this week's Deals with Gold. So make sure you go and check that out, because it's only for a week. You will want to check this one out this week.
Here are James's picks of the weekly deals. Farming Simulator 15, official expansion gold, get that. Hasbro Family Fun Pack, Super Edition. You know you want it.
I'm cutting.
Additionally, I'm just going to throw it out there, Monopoly Family Fun Pack. No, Shantae Half Genie Hero, super good game if you like some platformers, really good one in there. Yeah, it's a great list to look through. Ollie Ollie 2, super good. I had Ollie Ollie 1, super fun little skateboarding game. Yeah, there's some good stuff in here. Yeah, like Primal. I think Far Cry Primal at this price, definitely a pickup. Super cool.
Yeah.
Don't Starve, that's a good one too, yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of good games in here.
Ooh, I'm excited for this one. Can I do this one? Ooh, I'm so excited.
You can do this one.
I can do this one. So when I saw this on the list to talk about, this is in our mobile section now, which is that Shazam. Yes, that's correct. Shazam, remember them? Remember when you used to watch a video and it's like, Shazam this to learn more. Like, I'm already watching the video for the music. What is there to Shazam? They pull the plug officially on the Windows apps for PC and mobile that you didn't use anyways. It's officially no longer supported as of February 7th. So in the past, they already discontinued it. I guess that's what it literally said. When was this article from?
This is from today. This week.
So they've already discontinued it. No one knew, so they had to put out an official statement. That is so. I guess the app will continue to use, but they've already pulled it from the store. And you know, Cortana already has this built in. Your Siri, I'm pretty sure, has this built in. Google, the thingy on your phone, on your Android phones, it already has it built in. It'll just put it up to the speaker. It'll figure it out for you, and you can buy it in your respected app store.
Right. If you're still running Windows 10 Mobile, then just use Cortana for this. That's what that little music note icon is at the top of the Cortana screen on your Windows phone.
Yeah. Now, if you do love Shazam, that button.
Yeah.
If you love Shazam, it's available on the Apple App Store, Google Play, and the Amazon App Store. So if you really love your Shazam, it's available. But yeah, just hit your Cortana button. So you have no need for that.
Yeah, it's good. Use Cortana.
No, my goodness.
If you're still on Windows Phone. All right, James, we've already talked a lot about our entertainment centers, but I want to know what you've been doing lately. But I know you.
Uh-oh.
And I know that you're going to want to go on and on and on about your Switch.
No,
don't.
I won't
go on and on and on about your Switch.
I won't. I promise. It's not a Switch cast. It's a entertainment 2.0 cast. I promise not to go on. We'll recap it here, because I've already mentioned it a few times. Actually, I've been playing more games. I did a big charity stream a few weeks ago. I did 24 hours of gaming that I did on my Twitch channel, which is really fun. I got to experience some really new games and also do a lot of new co-op games. So there's actually a new game on Xbox One. It's an alpha release. It's called Astronair. That's what I'm calling it, which is like astronaut or Astronair. I'm pronouncing it wrong because the game creator came in my channel on Twitch and was telling me I was telling it wrong. But it's called Astronair. Thank you. Astronair. Astronair. It's super crazy fun. And it's like Minecraft, but in space without any enemies, and you're exploring and converting stuff. It's super fun. There's some issues right now around the host becomes really laggy after an hour because all your friends are joining your channel, but everyone else has a good time. But it's super fun. And I'm really into these alpha games. On the PC, I'm playing Blackwake, which is a pirate versus British boat, you know, game. Everyone's all British and they're loading cannons and you're firing against each other. It's super awesome, super fun. It reminded me why I don't like playing games online, because people are like vulgar for no reason. But I just, you know, right. At least in this game, it's a little bit better because everyone's really like, there's a captain, and you're steering the boats and you got to, you know, get the cannons, you got to fire, and you have like, you know, you have guns and you got to like, it takes like 30 seconds to reload them because it's like a muzzle and all this stuff. That's super fun. So definitely check. That's a pre-alpha. Did you watch me play that at all?
No. So you've mentioned Twitch now a couple of times. How do people find you on Twitch? I'm not a big Twitch guy.
I don't understand Twitch. So I Twitch streamed.
You just did it for 24 hours straight.
Yeah, so I got really into it. I got a whole card and things like that, so I can actually do live streaming of my Xbox, and I have the overlays of my video and my Switch and my PC game. So it's twitch.tv/James Montemagno. It is very long. So it's just my name, literally, on everything. We'll put that in the show notes, I'm sure. But you can look at my recap. All my stuff is on there. My Twitch is James Montemagno. My YouTube is James Montemagno. Everything is James. Twitter is James Montemagno. So yeah, it's cool. And I record the videos. You can watch them. And it's, yeah, Black Wake's super fun. And when I'm not playing that game, I have some friends that are playing some multiplayer SimCity 2013, which is one of my favorite SimCity games of all time. And there's just so much content in there. It's absolutely bananas. We've been creating cities and working together, and we Twitch stream that as well. So if you like SimCity, I love it. So you can definitely add me on Origin. And they're still updating the game. Literally last week, they updated the game again, which is, there's one developer who is watching us Twitch stream it and fixing bugs, I think. That's my analogy, my assumption.
So since you're getting all into Twitch streaming and stuff, have you tried Beam yet?
I haven't. I went to the Beam website. And if people don't know what Beam is, it's like Microsoft's competitor to Twitch, from my understanding. But it allows people to interact with the game. Like, there's buttons, and people would like donate money, and then people would dance on the screen. I didn't get it. And it was a really laggy website, so I just closed it.
Okay. There's two main features to Beam. Mm. And I bring this up because it is on Windows PCs, and it's coming to Xbox One. Mm. I think some insiders already have it.
Oh, cool.
The two main things are, there's way less lag. Like, when you're Twitch streaming, people who are watching you are like 30 seconds behind what you're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
With Beam, they're like less than a second behind.
Oh, cool.
Which makes that chat experience way easier. And then the other thing is, like you said, there's ways to allow the people who are watching the stream to interact with it and control your game and stuff. And I don't know a lot about how that works either, but it sounds like an interesting feature.
Yeah, sounds cool. And I saw that there was a lot of people simulcast to both. And I think if a lot of people didn't make it on Twitch, they went to Beam because there was a different type of audience that was looking for games. I'm not going to Twitch all the time, but I do it for fun. And I really like interacting with people. More of watching the playback, I think, is really fun. And watching the interactions is quite entertaining. I do enjoy it. I still don't understand Twitch. But I've been using some of the other apps like Discord to do like kind of gamer chat and voice. And it's kind of, there's a whole ecosystem around this thing that's really intriguing to me.
Yeah.
See, I didn't even talk about the Switch. Didn't even do it. I've been playing. And then we'll go to your games, and I'll talk just a tiny bit at the very, very end about the two shows I'm watching currently. But so I got a Nintendo Switch. I got four of them, and I sold three of them to friends at cost because I don't scalp people. I talked about this a little bit before the show. But I really wanted to have it for my game marathon, and I wanted to have Zelda, and I'm a big Nintendo fanboy, as you know, and I don't know. I thought the Switch was an amazing idea, the next evolution of home console and portable console from Nintendo. If you don't know what the Switch is, it's a handheld tablet type contraption that has Joy-Con controllers, so a left and right controller that snap onto the tablet and off. So when you dock it, you can remove them, and the dock allows you to, or whatever's on the tablet screen, go onto your television. And if you want, someone else wants to watch TV, they just, you know, put on the controllers, you undock it, and instantly it is on the tablet and you're playing the full game. So you're playing Zelda, the full game, 100% on your TV or on the go, or like I did today, on the plane with the little Joy-Con controllers off of it, which is really awesome. And it works amazing. Like, that was the first thing I was like, wow, like Nintendo, like it actually made it work. Like, it actually works. And I was a huge fan of the 3DS. Wii U, not so much, wasn't my favorite system. But I think that the Switch is on a huge, great momentum. I really love the system. It's really built like a professional machine. Like, it feels like an adult machine, but also not like fragile enough that if you gave it to your kid, that they would break it, right? So The screen's really crisp. It outputs. It's somewhere in between a Wii U and an Xbox One. So it's not, they're not going for that competition. They're going for this unique market, which is what Nintendo does. And we bought 1-2 Switch, actually, which has been super crazy fun as a party game. It seems super stupid, but it's super fun. We played it a bunch. You can watch our stream. We did that. It's embarrassing and amazing, which is fun. And then I've been playing this game from Shinen, which is Fast RMX. It's like a Wipeout / F-Zero game. You can get in and out like super high fast speed races, which is super fun. I know you like racing games. It's a $20 download. I don't know if it's on anything else, but it's called Fast RMX, and there's online multiplayer, and it has a unique system where it you can hit the X button essentially, and you'll either go from orange or blue, and there's these stripes and these pellets that give you boosts. So if you go yellow to yellow or orange to orange, you go super fast, or blue to blue, but if you do the wrong color, it slows you down. So it's quite interesting, like super high speed races. I find like if I need a break from Zelda, I'll do that. So Zelda, by the way, one of the best games ever created, the new one, Breath of the Wind. Amazing.
That's what I've heard.
So good. Buy it. So yeah, so good. Yeah, so good. Anyways, that's my, is that too much Switch talk? Is that right amount?
No, that's good. That's fine.
It's a good system.
All right, so you want me to do my game stuff before you move on to your videos? We can do that.
I think so, yeah.
Mine's short. I mentioned last week that I had like 10 minutes left of Mass Effect 3, you know, 75 hours into the trilogy when I recorded the show last week. So as soon as I hung up with Richard, I finished Mass Effect 3. Love it, love it, love it. Yeah, the ending, like there was so much complaining about the ending when this game launched in 2013. And okay. It's maybe not the greatest, but it's really hard to end something like this, guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe this is easier for me because it's 4 years after it came out or whatever. But yeah, I don't think the ending was really that bad. And for those of you wondering, yes, I did play with the updated DLC version of the ending and stuff with it explains a little bit more and stuff. But yeah, it's cool. Now I'm really looking forward to Mass Effect Andromeda, which comes out next week, except that I'm going to be gone all week next week. So, you know, I actually, the coworker of mine that I played all the way through all of these Mass Effect games with, we were talking today, maybe on Thursday, we'll both sign up for a month of EA Access, and then you get, you know, early access and like 10-ish hours of playtime.
Oh, cool.
And maybe we'll play Mass Effect 3 that way, like this weekend, and then I'll leave all next week. And then by then, we'll own the full game, and we can play through the rest of it after that. So will maybe that's what I'll do.
Will it just pick up automatically where you left off in the game save if you...
Yeah, as long as it's on the same system. You know, because okay. I've been going back, like I initially was going back and forth on whether I would get this on PC or Xbox One, but my PC, not really quite up to snuff for Mass Effect 3. So this is going to be Xbox for sure for me.
Got it. Got it. Cool.
And that's it. I don't have any video stuff to talk about. In terms of video stuff, all I've watched is hockey.
I like that. A little hockey action.
Yeah. Not all that surprising for me, I guess. Yeah.
Classic Josh. I've only we haven't been watching too much stuff. It's kind of been a down week. We watched The Bachelor season finale, which is quite interesting. Very, very upset. I was on Team Raven, so very sad about that. But it's okay. There's a new Bachelorette coming soon, which is exciting. And so we've been watching actually a show thanks to Entertainment 2.0. You are the reason that we started this and the reason that we continue to watch it, which is Mr. Robot, which is so good. We finished season one.
Hold on. Stop. Like you still can't spoil this. I know it's getting a little bit older now, but you can't say anything.
I'm not going to say anything.
No spoilers.
That's all I said. It was super good.
Okay.
Season two, crazy. So far, we're a few episodes in. We did a weekend of we could go out to the movies or we could binge watch the rest of season one because there's ups and downs. And at some point, it gets hard to watch so many episodes over and over. And this happens to a few other shows where you're just like, oh, this is intense. I can't really watch so many at 11 p.m. at night. So we watched all of season one. And we're like... Now I'm just like, I want to watch all of season two. So it's because I bought both of them. So super good. And Heather really got into this random show. I don't know if it's a Netflix specific show or what, but it's on Netflix, which is called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is the show about a crazy ex-girlfriend. But in general, but it's like they do music sing-alongs that are really funny during it. And she started like, it just randomly they'll break into song and it's like really comedic. I don't know. It's a good like couple type of show because I find it quite entertaining. And there's just these points where you just can't not laugh at it. So it's quite entertaining. And we just finished season two of that one, which is on Netflix. So
cool.
Yeah, that's it.
Alrighty, well, that's it for all of our what you been watching.
Look at that, under an hour and a half.
That's the bar you're setting.
Yes.
We normally go for an hour here.
Okay. Ooh.
Well, that's what we try to hit. We never do though. Never do. So yeah, that's probably good. So if you want to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard, even though he's not here, he's at Richard Gunther on Twitter. The website is at DigiMediaZone. James, you are?
I'm everywhere at James Montemagno. So YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, at James Montemagno. It's nice, short, and sweet. You can find me anywhere like that. I also do another podcast. I do like to podcast. It's a little bit more technology focused. I know Josh Pollard is number one fan. He was just talking about how he bought all the stickers for the show. It's called Merge Conflict, which is we do all sorts of development technology. Sometimes we go off on a ramble and do a Nintendo Switch episode, but it's called Merge Conflict. You can go to mergeconflict.fm. It's super awesome. We release every single Monday at midnight PST or Pacific because cool. I don't understand daylight savings time because that's hard. That'll be one of the episodes. I'm sure.
Yeah. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/thedmz. We're on Google Plus. We've got an email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. James plugged his other show. I also feel like I should plug Richard's other show. It's Home On. I have to plug it because James, I love Merge Conflict, but Home On is my favorite podcast.
Oh, interesting.
And that's Richard's other show. That is his show about home automation. But the thing is, I love Home On. I love Merge Conflict. And I got both of them, basically, the last episode, because you were on Home On.
It was best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. So go and check out Home On. Then rate us. Give us a rating on iTunes. You can find us there. You can find us on Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Ratings are nice, but, you know, like I said last week, I would rather, you know, for the next couple of weeks, just go and tell somebody. Just tell a friend about this show that you think might listen to it, especially if there's someone who doesn't listen to podcasts at all. Get them into podcasting. It's awesome. You find a friend, especially like if you're a developer, here's what you do. You say, hey, developer friend,
I have your Slack channel.
Three shows that I think you would like to listen to. They're called Entertainment 2.0, Home On, and Merge Conflict.
Bam.
You've got three awesome podcasts to listen to, and they'll love it, and they'll thank you forever. Then, what's a lot of fun for us, and it's a lot of fun for you, is when you guys come while we're recording this show and talk with us. There's a live chat room. You can hear us as we record it. We talk back and forth. You get your voice in while we're recording the show, and it's a ton of fun. We normally do this Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. The best way to know for sure, because we're not always at that time, is to just follow us on Twitter. We'll always tweet as to when we're going to be recording. But that's going to do it for episode, 400. I'm Josh Pollard. I was joined tonight by James Montemagno, and we'll be back next time for episode 401. Until then, adios.
Peace.